Welcome back, everyone, to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery, and I have with me Emily Cohen. We are at the How Design Live 2018 here in Boston.
Woohoo.
Yeah. Now, you're New York. It's not that.
Yeah. No, it's real close by.
You just take the train, take
the car, just took
whatever.
The train, yeah. All right. So it's nice. I like conferences that are a little closer. Getting sick of flying.
Now, Emily, you spoke yesterday here.
Yep.
About the power of saying no.
I did.
And I'm kind of wondering, like, if you teach everyone to say no, when you ask them for anything, no one's going to talk to you anymore.
Well, I'm hoping they're going to use their no selectively.
Okay.
So I think the point is that when you use no, it's when you really need to use no. Like, you're at the point where you've negotiated, you've done everything you can, and now you're like, I need to say no. Like, you're not going to say no to everything in your life. You know, if you did, that would be a whole other situation. But it's for when you really need to use that word.
Yeah, because the idea is that you said, by saying no, you're really selectively saying yes in a way, right?
Well, no.
I mean, because you're giving yourself time to do what you should be doing.
Yes. So you're giving yes to the universe to say, I need other, you know, not yes to whatever you're saying no to, but yes to other things in your life, in your work, in your, you know, in your career. So yes, you're saying yes to other things. Exactly.
And since you obviously prepared for a talk, you just came up with, you know, you worked on this a bit.
Yeah.
Did you start saying, have you been saying no more since?
It definitely
since
taught
this
me
happened?
Things. You know, as you research talks, you learn from yourself, right? And you learn from the research you do. So it definitely, I started recognizing, I'm pretty good at saying no, especially in my business life, maybe personal life not as good. I think what I started recognizing is some of the behaviors I do that undermine my no. So like one of the things I say is all the time I say, you know what I mean? And that
I'm
undermines.
Not sure I know what you mean.
And so that, you know, saying things that qualify your no kind of removes the power from it. So when I started researching no, I realized I was doing things to undermine my own no. And so I've learned to get better at the no. And what I love about the talk is that all the stories that I hear afterwards, you know, people talking to me about how either what I said helped them or they needed to have a specific example and give me a specific example and say, well, how do you take your strategies and apply the no?
So can you give us an example of no?
Of no. Like, how do you say it, or like a situation where you would say no?
Either one.
Yeah. I think it really depends on where you're working. So in-house, a lot of times, I just heard this yesterday. So two people came up to me and they have virtual teams, so they're separated virtually, and then they have virtual clients all over. In-house, they said they can't say no to their clients. Like, they have all these requests from the clients. And I just simply asked them, why can't you say no to clients? Like, I think sometimes people don't think they can say no. And so in that situation, I talked to them about, well, why do you need to say no? And how do you say no to make it so that it, you don't, so what happened is they said no by an email. They said, we didn't have the resources, we can't do this project. And then the clients never came back to them. They lost all these in-house clients because they said no. So they're fearful of that no because they don't want to lose these clients. And I said, well, you probably said it wrong, first of all.
Right. I mean, no seems like an easy word to say.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think they sent an email, which is also not a good idea when you say your no. You really need to make the personal connection and to explain your no. So even though they said they explained it in an email, you really need to explain it in person to them. You know, which is say, my no is this. We don't have, for them, it was they had lack of resources at the moment. So they said, we can't take on these projects right now, but here's what we're doing to fix that problem. So in 2 months or 1 month, we'll be ready to take on this work. That's a no when you really don't have resources, but a lot of times no is around more when people are pushing you in the wrong direction. So like design firms, because that's mostly my client base, I work with a lot of design firms, the no is more to work that they shouldn't be doing or to client requests that take their company in a different direction, or to clients that are just simply assholes. You know, when clients are just misusing their relationship. Like, do this, you know, revision in 2 hours. And, you know, when can they say no without hurting the client relationship? So I think that's a lot of times when people have to say no, is to scope creep that's above and beyond the call of duty or that pushes the team and hurts the staff morale.
Yeah, and you also mentioned that part of the no is to kind of actually plan the worst case scenario.
Yes, exactly.
In your head.
Yeah,
and I think everybody does that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they automatically, if I say no, this is all going to happen.
Right.
But you said that it's actually a positive to actually think of that negative.
Yeah. So I make the point of saying just think about the worst case scenario. Now, not you don't want to be, so there's a difference between making assumptions, like this is how they're going to respond. Because it's very hard to make assumptions because you're never always right, and then it stops you from saying no effectively. But you can think about, like, what's your plan B? What's going to kind of hold you steady and strong? So are you willing to quit? Or do you need to get other help? Or do you need to seek legal advice? You know, so where are you willing to go if the no does not work, if you don't win your no? Because if you have that, that keeps you steady and strong and going on direction. So you have to envision what that plan B is. What are you willing to do?
And then, but you said also, like, the thing that I should probably do more is too, is think of the positive of what, if that happened in the worst case scenario, How is that a positive?
Yeah. Well, you have to think about that. Like, you have to think, sometimes you go way down the line. So if you, are you willing to seek help? So is it terrible if you go to the, let's say you have to say no to your boss and they don't accept the no, then do you go to HR? Right? Is that going to be so bad? Maybe it will be, and then maybe that's not how far you want to go. So you have to think about that. Did I lose my train of thought there? Did I answer your question?
No.
No, I didn't. There we go. That's how you say no. You have to just think. So then you go backwards. If you say, like, I'm not willing to quit. Like, I had a person who just said to me, I am not willing to quit. So we had to go backwards and say, what are you willing to do? Because if you're not willing to do anything, then your no is not going to have any power.
Yeah.
So you have to be willing to accept something. And if that means seeking other help, sometimes a lot of times it's about seeking your peers and saying, okay, we all feel this way. Let's all talk together. So maybe it's you're willing to say, if this doesn't work, there's power in numbers.
Okay.
So I think there's different ways of thinking about it. So you have to backtrack to say, okay, I'm not willing to go that far to quit or to, you know, go to HR or to go to legal, but I'm willing to do something else. And what is that? So you prepare for it. So there's a lot of preparation in saying you know.
Yeah, it's not just you're not just saying just start saying no to everything.
No,
you actually there's a lot of it's a selective no that you're actually but you're also very firm on it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's only like I talk about this a lot because a lot of times people when they come to my talk about no, they think it's about negotiating, and I'm like, no, this is after negotiating. After you've tried to compromise and after you've tried to negotiate, if it's still not working, then you're ready to really walk away from the situation. That's when you say you know. So it's a very different thing. No is when you're really ready. And so it's very selective. It's not like all the time.
Right. It's not just no, and then, I got nothing to do.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's really thinking about what pushes your boundaries. And we all say no to different things, right? So we have to pick what our battles are. And then that's, I think, one of the things I talk about. Like, you know, this is being a parent. You have to pick your battles. Like, otherwise, if you say no to everything your kids do or your dogs do or anything like that, you'll just be a negative person. But you have to pick, and it's just so exhausting. So same with clients and same with staff. You have to kind of pick your battles and say, this is not worth pushing back on. I can deal with this, but this is something that's worth pushing back on.
Yeah, you can't. Every design thing that comes in, you can't have a fight on all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes a client says, we want this, and you're like, it's an 11th sales sheet. I can make it look just like the other 10. I don't need to fight this.
Exactly. And I have a client that is actually the opposite problem, which is they do say no to everything. And I think that's damaged their relationships with their clients because they just use it willy-nilly and they feel like that's a way to manage a client. And I'm like, no, you have to use it more selectively because they didn't have long-term relationships with their clients. And I think they were using it too much. So I usually see the opposite way. They don't use it enough, but I did have a client that used it way too much. She was like, I have no problem though. I'm like, yeah, it's your problem.
Yeah. I could see it going too far.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We're going to be right back with Emily Cohen. Brutally Honest.
Yes.
New book.
It's my new book. I'm very excited. Yeah.
So I got the Kickstarter's already over.
It's over. It was over 2 weeks ago. 140% funded. Woohoo!
And now you help people drum up business and
yep.
Creatives drum up business.
Yeah, well, I teach them how to do it. Yep, exactly.
Okay, so it was fun to see because, you know, it's one of these, like, we assume that you know how to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
But like, when we've talked before, you know, everything's kind of, like, confidential. It's not like you can say, I'll give you referrals, but it's not like you have, like, case studies per se. Because I'm sure the clients don't want to see that.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden when I saw that you were doing it, you announced that you were going to do this Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It was fun because you were like 80% funded in like 2 days.
Yeah,
And so I'm like, oh, Emily not only does this for their clients, she can actually use it herself. So yeah. She actually can. Like I that was when I realized you actually do know what you're doing.
Exactly. Oh, that's really pretty funny. Yeah.
No, but I mean that's like yeah. That was I knew you knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
But that was when I was like, that is proof Emily really does know what she's doing.
Exactly. And to me, it was really interesting too, because I was kind of terrified going into this Kickstarter, because it was a lot about the ask, asking all my friends, because I have a lot of friends in the industry. And by friends, I mean these people like you that I see once in a year at conferences, but I think they're friends. And I had to ask a lot of my friends to, if they didn't already offer, to help promote the book. And that was hard, you know, and I understood that because I teach my clients that the ask is hard. But I framed it, and it was just a conversation. It was not like, do you have to do this? It wasn't about sales. And once, it was all about relationships. And I realized all these great people who I love and adore, who I admire, were so happy to support me, which helped me get to that incredible funding, because all my friends just came out of the woodwork and supported me, mostly because we all help each other out. And they trusted me, and I trusted them, and we have good relationships. And that's what I try to teach my clients, is like, it's all about trust and value and friendships and building that relationship. It's not really sales.
And is this the first time, on a large scale, where you had to actually use your own advice like this?
Well, I had to use it, so it was different. So this one was about getting money.
Yeah.
Or getting sort of like social media presence and getting people, like influencers, to promote it. And then for me, but I use it all the time for getting new business for myself. Like, so for the most part, I'm just like my clients. So a lot of my business comes through referrals, because I'm pretty well known and I work with pretty amazing people, so the word spreads. But I also want to go and out and meet some people that I want to work for. I don't want to allow my clients to control my business, just like I tell them that. So I still have to do relationship building in my own business, because I want to get the kind of clients I want to work for.
Okay.
You know, like even just when I first started my business, I really loved Louise Feely, and I went after her. She didn't come to me. You know, I said, look, I work with your peers, and I think you are exactly the kind of client I want to work for. You know, so you could just go out to the people that you want to work for.
And you'd sent along, I think the email I got, you'd sent along like a 20-page PDF of the book.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And so I read that. It reads great.
Oh, thank you.
It's the only part of the book I've read. I'm still waiting for my copy. And of course, like every time I meet with you, it's always like, why am I not doing this more? You know, you read these things and they seem obvious, but when they're written well and it's presented well, and you're like, okay, this makes sense. So I tweeted out.
Yeah, I appreciate
about
that.
The book, and then I went and got in the super super early bird thing, and I'm like, it's like halfway through day one, and the super super early bird's almost sold out.
Yeah, it was sold out in day one. It was crazy. Yeah, and the book is very specifically targeted to creatives in a lot of different ways. Like, it's definitely, if you don't know me, and that's why it's called Brutally Honest. I'm very straightforward. And very right to the point. And I wanted a book like that, because there's a lot of books that go so deep.
You mentioned it's not Brutally Honest isn't about being mean.
No. Yeah. It's just being about being direct and honest and truthful to yourself and to the people you're talking to. And that always is a good thing. It's never a bad thing.
Okay.
Brutally Honest, the word Brutally Honest has some negative connotations. And it's not what that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just being really truthful. More than just honest, being really fully truthful in all situations. And so the book is just like that. It's just like me. It's super straightforward, and it's very, like, there's bulleted points, there's checklists, a lot of information graphics, because designers, I wanted it to be a book that designers can, like, treasure, not just read, so that's a resource and an ongoing resource. They can, it's like an object that they love that they can put on their desk, or that is, like, front and center on their bookshelves, so it has nice paper, it's printed in, like, six colors. It's actually, it's going to be printed in, we're thinking 8 or 9 colors.
Oh, 8 or 9 colors, jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy, and the paper is gorgeous, and, you know, it's going to be something that designers love. And a lot of business books are just all text.
Right.
And this is not that at all. It's highly visual, lots of colors.
So what made you think to write this book in the first place?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. So first of all my competitors were writing books, and I had not written a book. The second thing, and there's three things. One is my competitors had done it, and I hadn't done it. The second thing was that, I think this is really funny, but people have come up to me at least once a year to say, oh, I read your book, that's why I want to work with you. And I've never written a book. It's because I think people have read content I've written, or they've seen me speak, and so they think that I've written this book, and I haven't. So I thought for those people, I should write a book so they can really be true to themselves. But then the third thing, and this is the main reason, is there are a lot of people that can't afford to work with me. But I want people to practice, and I really care about the industry. This is really important to me. I think that a lot of designers are practicing poor behaviors that are hurt our whole industry. So I wanted to create a book that sort of was a Bible for our industry overall so that people can practice really good ethical behaviors. And if we all compete fairly, then when we are against each other in a bidding situation or when we're not undermining each other, we're getting the work simply because of the quality of our work, not because we're pricing too low or because we're doing things like doing spec work, which is unethical, you know. So there's different things that the book talks about so that everybody – I want to level set the industry. My goal is that we all just – practice some basic behaviors and practices.
Yeah, because if we don't get a job, a lot of times you never hear who gets the job or why, but every now and then you'll hear something. And if the client says, well, they basically did all the work for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever, then you're like, well, that sucks. Because you feel mad because you're like, this isn't helping anybody.
No.
But if you just hear that, hey, they just, you know, they were a better fit, they like these people.
Yeah.
They'd already used them.
Then you feel better.
Yeah, we lost one job, and we found out later because they actually told us. They said we just used the person that we used last time.
Yeah.
And then I was just mad because I'm like, why'd you make me go through all these hoops?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I wasn't even going to respond to this RFP and made me go through all these hoops. And then you just go back to your old girlfriend, basically.
Yeah. And actually, the book has answers for that because that happens a lot.
Okay.
So it gives you – there's this whole question – there's a whole section or chapter just on the questions you ask during the new business.
Please tell me it's called Why Is My Rage Justified or Not?
Yeah. And it's like, how many firms am I competing against? Who am I competing? How are you going to select them? Because right away you can find out if they say there's an in-house that we're working with, we're getting somebody that we already work with, you can say, well, why do you want to switch? And you'll hear messages about maybe why they don't want to switch. You know, you start hearing things. Or you can say, look, you know, I will be honest. I'm not usually, if I'm up against people who already have the account, it's very hard to win.
Yeah.
So I want to know exactly why you want to, are you ready to leave this person? And you'll be amazed how honest people will be if you ask the right questions.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So where do people go to buy the book or to find out now?
So right now,
because I got mine on Kickstarter, but obviously that's done.
It's done. You can order it on my site right now, so emilycohen.com. It also will be through, because I'm self-publishing. I have a great self-publishing title. So my publisher's name is Bookseller's Daughter. So you can go to booksellersdaughter.com and get the book as well.
Okay.
Right now it links just to my website, but it is going to have its own site soon when I get my act together. Because I'm a bookseller's daughter. My father was on two bookstores.
Oh, really?
Which is another reason why I wrote this book, because my father is 92, and he's really healthy and happy, and he's fine. But I really wanted to do a book before he passed. It's a terrible thing to say, but I think he'd be really – I want to make my dad proud. Because he doesn't know what the hell I do.
He's going to reopen the shop.
Yeah.
Reopen the shop just to stock your book.
Yeah, exactly. The funny thing, so he lives in a retirement community.
Yeah.
And he was very specific. He wanted 7 copies of the book.
Oh.
I'm like, why 7? He goes, I have 7 friends. I want to share this book with 7 friends. I'm like, you know, these guys who are 92 years old who don't know what design is do not need this book, Dad. But he was like so proud. Yeah. You know, it was adorable. So,
well, I don't – see, I read that as he wants 7 copies because he has 7 friends, which means he doesn't want a copy for himself.
That's true.
Maybe it's 8 he really needs.
Although he did tell me he wants to try to sell it for me. He's like, I'm going to put it on A-Libris and sell the book. I'm like, why would you do? I was like, I didn't understand that at all, but I'm like, okay, Dad, whatever you want to do. So he was going to get a copy and probably sell it.
All right.
Because that's my dad. He wants to sell everything.
He's not giving it to his friends. He's making cash off of this off of this transaction.
Yeah. When he told me that, I was just dying. It was so funny.
All right. The book's at emilycohen.com. We'll be right back with Emily. So the thing, I guess, and this changes all the time. When someone hires you, like a creative firm, what do they hire you to actually, like, what is your role there?
That's a good question. And it's changed over the years, right?
That's what I mean. Because, I mean, we talked about it years ago, and I've talked to you since, but I've never actually, over the last dozen years, I don't think I've ever said, like, what do people hire you to do right now?
And it changes. So just like your business changes, right? So now digital, whatever. There's lots of different, like, a lot of designers are writing and providing strategy and naming and videos. you know, a few years ago, we weren't doing that kind of stuff. And that's how my business has changed. It's very similar. So when I first started out, as you probably remember, I would write a lot of proposals for them and I'd help them price. But now designers feel very comfortable.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is last time we talked, like four years ago or mm-hmm. something, you said that proposals were kind of on the,
yeah.
like they, it was all like relationships, most of your clients. And the proposal was just like bullet points of what we discussed, dollar amount.
Yeah, exactly.
And when we first met, I think you said the proposals were like long form, like letters, where it was almost like the full introduction and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's completely changed. Yeah. And now I don't even write proposals. I think that's like 2% of my business. You know, now I spend a lot of time. So I think what's changed for me in the business is the clients I work with are smarter than they ever used to be. So when I first started out, designers were just good artists and designers, but they weren't good business people. Now, especially the younger generation, they're smart as all hell. They know what they're doing, and they care about the business of design. They're learning it a little bit in school, or they're just really entrepreneurial. I think certainly the millennials are very entrepreneurial. So they've pushed me to say think beyond what I normally do. And so now I'm doing a lot of, like, a ton of this, which is doing strategic business planning, spending a day with my clients or more, thinking about where they are now, where the current state is of their business, and then where do they want to go and how do they get there. And then what are the practices in between there to get to that direction?
Okay.
So some of my – and every of my clients have different problems. So we try to solve – like one of my clients had an Agrilla client that was like 75% of their business. So,
oh, yeah, which is like – it's like the good problem to have because you have a lot of business.
Exactly.
But in the long term, you're like you need to
– yeah, and so that's what he was thinking
unless
about.
You can live on the 25%, then it's a great problem to have.
Yeah.
But
knowing that, yeah, exactly, because you could lose that 75% at any point.
Yeah.
And he does, you know, and everybody who has a Gorilla client says, oh, they'll never leave me. They always say that. Oh, no, it's been going on forever. But there will always be a chance that that's going to happen, and you have to be prepared for it.
They could go on a business. They could move.
Yeah.
But really, like, they may never leave you, but when that boss leaves or retires
exactly.
and a new one comes in, that person doesn't have any. Yeah.
And not only that, but those kind of clients end up kind of the kind of work you're doing for them is not that exciting. So this guy, the work wasn't that exciting. He didn't even want to show in his portfolio this firm, and it was like a 6-person firm. They didn't even want this Gorilla client in a lot of ways because it was the work. Then 75% of the work was work they didn't want to show.
Which also hurts with morale.
Yeah, exactly.
It hurts with the. I mean, you get burned out in this industry, and that'll burn you out.
Yeah. So for them, we worked a whole day to figure out what does that mean to the. How can we not lose that client necessarily, but maybe trim the client, train the client,
okay.
rethink how they're serviced, and move the company beyond that. But every time I do business planning retreats, it's different things. So I have one client.
Was that successful for them?
Absolutely.
Was their goal to shrink that and then to grow the other 25%?
Or they were not willing to shrink it. They decided to just make sure that they were building up other business and to change that relationship. So they didn't want to lose the dollar amount that they were getting, but they wanted to do less for price. So they wanted to change their pricing structure, which they were successful to do. So they changed how their retainer was negotiated. What their big change was, the principal of the firm was spending most of the time being the project manager for this account.
Oh, okay.
So we switched that to say we're going to hire somebody, and we introduced them. They even helped hire the person so they can trust this person, so that the principal of the design firm can get out of the weeds of this one client and really focus on his business.
Right. Do what the person wanted to do in the first place.
Exactly. So that's what we mostly did. We switched the relationship, and then we were able to teach him skills. I was able to teach him skills about how to expand the business, figure out what his focus was going to be, his area of expertise, and also how to build his portfolio back up to be able to get that kind of work. So, but then I have other clients that are really in good shape. Like their business is growing, they continue to do really well, but they just want to keep evolving. They don't want to ever stagnate. So those clients, we just look at what's working really well, what's the next step? So one of my clients was doing really great. They did a lot of work for basically firms that do good for the world, so social good design.
Sure.
And so for first 1 year, we transitioned them from just doing nonprofit to foundation work. Then we transitioned that to strategy. So then we were figuring out, what can we upsell? And one area was strategy. We're not selling strategy. We're losing work to firms that were providing strategy. And the strategy pays better. That's where all the money is.
Oh, okay.
So how do we upsell strategy? but in an unauthentic way, not this bullshit way of like PowerPoint decks. I mean, nothing, you know. So we transitioned them over the course of 2 to 3 years to be more strategists, and now that's what they're doing. They do a lot of the work is all based on strategy first. So yeah, every one of my clients has different needs. So that's a lot of what I do is these kind of big picture. Where's my business going? How do I get there? I also do a lot of just daily troubleshooting, like how to deal with an asshole client or how to get new business skills. So I do give my clients, if they're hiring, we talk about who the next hire is, how to manage their team. If they're dealing with some challenges on their team, I help them with that. So anything, all the business stuff that designers hate doing, I help them with, and I love doing that.
Okay. Because, yeah. I mean, by now you've probably seen it all.
Yeah, I have. And they think everything is so different. Every once in a while I do hear something unusual.
No one's ever had a client this mean.
Yeah,
no one's ever had a client this rude.
Exactly. You know, you're not going to believe the situation. They always say that. I'm like, I hear it and I'm like, you know, there are a lot of employee situations, you know. Every once in a while I'm like, oh, that's a new one.
we're a profession of characters.
Yeah.
Like, this profession's great. There's a lot of characters in it. And sometimes talent comes with other baggage.
Exactly.
But it's part of what's fun.
Yeah, that's why I love what I do. Because I work with just amazing people. They're all quirky.
Yeah.
Right? I'm quirky. Because I used to be a designer. So I'm just as quirky as my clients are. I love them because of those quirks. For the most part.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while I have a client that, you know, it's struggling. Like I have a client right now who I adore. I've worked with for 20 years. I absolutely adore him. But he's not listening to anything I say. Because he's very, you know, he's kind of like change averse. So I'm struggling with that one. I'm actually thinking of ready to say no on that.
You're mapping out the scenarios already.
Yeah.
You're mapping them out. How far?
How far. You know, because I want to help. My end goal is not to make lots of money. Because if I want to make a lot of money, I shouldn't work for designers. You know, my goal is to really help clients. Like, I really want to see them grow or change. You know, so I want to see the results of what I do. And if I don't see it, it gets very frustrating.
Yeah, and I could understand that.
Yeah, because I care about my clients a lot because they're such nice people.
Yeah.
You know.
And you mentioned that your one client wanted to – they were doing well, but they wanted to evolve. And that's the thing I think I always try to remember is that when you're busy is when you actually have to start promoting the next work.
Exactly.
Because when the work dies, it dies like off a cliff.
Yeah.
And when you're that slow, you can't. It's hard to get work because you always sound desperate, no matter what you try.
Yeah.
But when you're crazy busy, you can send out notes, be like, "Hey, we'd love to talk." And blah, blah. And I don't know, just sound confident. And you don't care, so you also have that nonchalance.
Yeah.
That,
yeah, you could do what I do. It's exactly that. I mean, I think that new business is something it's a habit that you do all the time. And also, here's the big thing, and I think that designers don't realize this. Is it takes 2 years to win a client.
Yeah, you mentioned that last time. Yeah. I've been telling people, and then the longer you talk about it, it's like, no, that's right.
Yeah, if you literally track most relationships, it's literally 2 years to the date. It's almost always that way. Because it takes a while for people to build up trust. So you have to stay in touch with all these people. And when you're desperate, when you have no work, that doesn't bring in work immediately. Because like you just said, then you sound desperate. And it takes 2 years. So those people will maybe turn into clients 2 years, but they don't solve your problem of being slow at this moment.
No.
So that's why it has to be a habit. It has to be something you're constantly doing, but in an authentic way.
Yeah, and when you ask for work, too, it's not like the work's just there.
Right.
I mean, you may be slow, but they're like, well, we're finishing up projects. There won't be a new project for 3 months.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, so it's helping my clients come up with those, what do they have to do, what maybe doesn't have to happen. You know, because there's a lot... Look, and you know this as a small business owner. Most of my clients are small to mid-sized firms. You can't do everything.
Right.
And designers have a tendency to have a lot of side projects, like podcasting
or
some design entrepreneurship.
Yeah, you know? I have that. I have that side projects, yeah.
So we have to decide, like, where you would weigh your time.
Right.
You know, because that's hard. It's hard to balance all of those things. And I get that creatives want to do all these fun things, but at some point you have to... prioritize which of those businesses is the most important and where do you put that energy.
But yeah, and part of it is though is I was a few years, I don't know, over my career I've become kind of honest about what I will push and do and where I'm like I start to learn like I can't do that.
Yeah.
like someone starts asking, like even on this, like I'm happy to record this podcast. I love doing this.
Yeah.
But the minute someone mentions something like, oh, maybe we could do something with video, I'm like, I don't have the time. Like,
yeah.
Like I can run GarageBand here. and we've done very limited video or something. And uh-huh. it was like the time commitment difference is immense.
Yeah.
And just immense.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, it's not going to happen anytime.
Yeah.
Or there's certain projects where I'm like, okay, that's not what we do.
So that's what you're doing. So you're saying no to some parts of the business. Like, you're like, this is working really well for what I want it for to be.
Yeah.
And I don't need to add the video component. I think that's great. A lot of designers don't know when to stop.
Yeah. And I do have people call and they ask about what they're looking for. And there's certain projects where like, man, that might pay. And so you're like, let me think about it. There's money involved.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, you know, no, it's not. I mean, I can't. That's not what we do.
And I think that's your no, right? So I think that's a lot of designers have a tendency to do that, even with their design business, which is to take any work that comes in. But they really have to say, is that the kind of work I want to be doing?
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if I want to do that kind of work. And maybe you do. Like, if they give you a video and you've never done video and you want to do it, that's cool.
Oh, nothing. I mean, my entire profession is made by – my entire career is made by – doing projects we're probably unqualified to do.
Yeah.
You know.
But clients are not listening to this, right?
No, but it's like, but we know that we could do it.
Yeah.
And so those projects aren't no's.
Yeah.
But there are certain ones where you're like, that is not in the direction that we're, you know, right. I know I'm not going to be a fit for that.
Right, exactly. Like we were just talking about before you were taping, like maybe not doing word templates.
Yeah.
You know, if that feels like, unless it's for an existing client and you just want to help them out. But for the most part, you don't want to be doing stuff that really is not a good use of your creativity and your team.
Yeah.
So
our biggest, I think, no I've done over the last 10 years probably is we got rid of all the clients that, you know, we just didn't – when the phone rings, you just didn't want to pick it up.
Yeah.
And so we don't – if we don't get along or
yeah.
with the client, we just for whatever reason or if the work wasn't the fit – we haven't done any, and then the other work's way more fun.
Yeah,
because even though I'm not saying that we don't do projects that are, you know, sales sheets.
Yeah, we all do
we've
that.
We've done some word templates, things like that. It's like the people we work for, we do other work for them, and so it's like, yeah, we'll work with.
Yeah,
them.
Exactly. So if you're doing other really good work for clients, then you're going to help them out with the other kind of stuff.
Or if we just like them.
Yeah.
Sometimes
exactly.
there's some people, but it's not.
Yeah.
And some of them are smaller where it's like, we know we only do this work for this client. Is it the best use of our time? No, but we like them.
Yeah.
And they're nice about it.
Yeah. But sometimes you also, like, I love the idea that you have to let go of clients sometimes. You really do. And even though they've been with you forever, sometimes it's just they don't grow with you. Like, you end up doing kind of more executional stuff that you're not doing the really good stuff, and you have to say no to those kind of clients. And so it is hard sometimes to fire clients that you might even like, but the work you're doing is not, or they just haven't changed their pricing in years.
And I
always say you should always fire a client at least once a year, one client a year.
One. All right, well then the amount that fire you, so, so yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's okay to be fired by a client too.
Yeah.
Well, we had a, you know, a friend of mine, he was doing a bunch of little pro bono jobs, and they decided their firm, they were going to do like one giant pro bono job a year.
Okay, yep.
But he'd been working with these other people, and it's like, oh, how do I fire a bunch of clients that I've worked with for a decade?
Oh, yeah. What did he do?
Well, I think on some of them that he'd worked with less, you just tell them no.
Yeah.
And the other ones, like one of them, and the reason I know this all happened was because he called me up. It's like, hey, we have this client I've worked with for X number of years, and I'm not going to do these. Like, do you want a smaller pro bono job? So, yeah. And I was like, we'll do that one.
Yeah. But this
So on that one, then he called him, and instead he said, hey, we're going to
recommend somebody else.
We're going to, yeah, we found someone that's going to work great for you.
Yeah.
So it's like, he said no to them, but he also said, like,
yes.
Here you go.
Yeah. Now that's a great way of doing it. This is what I love about our industry. We all help each other out.
Yeah. By giving each other pro bono
yeah.
jobs that no one gets paid for.
or giving each other clients that maybe they're not right for their firm.
No, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
For different reasons. It could be it's too you know, they're getting too big, but there's a smaller firm that could really use the work. Or there's an expertise that they don't have that somebody else has. You know?
Right.
Like, I know all my competitors.
In a lot of mine, when they call and I know they're not good fits, we refer them off.
Yeah.
If we think that – if that's the reason we don't say yes to it, we're like, we don't do that type of work. Here's a number.
Yeah, exactly. And I, like, for me, I know my competitors really well. We're all really friends. Like, all the consultants out there, we kind of all know each other, and we're really good friends, and we're always constantly referring each other. It's great. Like, David Baker tweeted, did my a real great support about my book, and I supported his book, like, you know, because I think his book's awesome. He thinks my book is awesome. It's all love.
Plus, everyone thinks you wrote his book, right?
I don't think so.
They read his book, and then they're like, oh, that must have been Emily's book I read.
It might be. Although we have very different styles.
I know.
Yeah,
could Emily, be.
That's
Emily,
the book.
Always good.
Yeah.
It's emilycohen.com. Book is brutally honest, and we'll hopefully catch up with you soon.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.